to make her a contribution or her presentation. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Pipia. I think, before we proceed to the acting CEO, we have invited, we have ensured that all our entities that have audit committees, chairpersons of the audit committees also deliver their reports for the CEO or the DG delivers his or her reports. And I saw in your delegation that the chair of the audit committee is part of the delegation. I think if she can be properly introduced, and I would invite her to deliver her report before we go to this acting CEO's report.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Apology for also not acknowledging her, but I will allow the acting CEO to just introduce her, and then she can then start and address the members of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, PP. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee. We have Ms. Princess Mangoma, who is the Chairperson of the Audit Committee for the Public Protector South Africa. The portion that relates to internal audit matters is part of the presentation that we have prepared. If the Chairperson allows that, we jump straight to those issues related to audit for the Chairperson to go through and also highlight any other issues that she would like to highlight to the Portfolio Committee.
That would be appreciated.
Thank you, Chief.
Good afternoon, all protocols observed. My name is Princess. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee. I will allow internal audit to present, and then I'll come through with the high-level issues in terms of the challenges and the successes that we have achieved throughout the period that I was chairing the Audit Committee. So, acting CEO, you can go on with the presentation. After that, I'll give the highlights. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Audit Committee. Through you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the issues related to the internal audit are on slide 53.
Sorry, Chair. Chair, sorry for interrupting. Wilma here. Can the Chairperson of the Audit Committee, Princess, please put her video on so we can see her face or there she is. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Can I go ahead, Chairperson?
You are muted, Chair. You are muted, Chair.
Thank you. Yes, no, thank you very much. No, I did not see her. We would like to see the chair of the audit committee.
Chair, thank you. My video is on.
No, I think, okay, let's proceed. I think it's the issue of the slides. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The audits that were conducted by our internal audit are listed in the slide. In 1920 financial year, they conducted an audit of performance information for quarter one to quarter three, human resources management, investigation, supply chain. They also did a follow-up review on other audits they'd done in the past. They also did asset management. They also audited the annual report, the 18-19 annual report, prior to it being finalized. They also did a review of the annual financial statements that were audited. In the current financial year, they've conducted an audit on corporate. They also did a review or an audit of our financial statements before they could be submitted on the 31st of July, as well as the annual performance report prior to such submission and for audit purposes. On slide 54 is the details of the major issues that were identified during the audit in relation to the performance information for quarter one to quarter three in the 1920 financial year, the findings related to incorrect reporting of performance information, and management agreed with the findings and later resolved those issues. On supply chain management in 1920, findings related to inadequate management of contracts awarded to service providers, and management agreed to the findings. They ensured that the process to renew contracts are done in advance to allow procurement processes to be finalized on time. The matter was resolved and it is continually being monitored. On human resource management aspect in 1920, there were inefficiencies that were noted regarding the recruitment and selection. Management agreed with the findings and the matters were then resolved. In the next slide, still in 1920, on asset management, findings related to useful life of assets of an asset that was recorded in the fixed asset register, management agreed and later resolved the matter. Under investigation, findings related to registration, assessment and investigation turnarounds which were not adhered to, management agreed to the findings and they've put measures in place to ensure that the issue is resolved. In the current year, on corporate governance review, the findings related to non-compliance with prior requirements and non-adherence to timelines for provision of requested information. Management agreed to the finding and management is currently putting measures in place that the issues are resolved. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the end of the internal audit report. Thank you so much.
Chair of the Audit Committee.
Chairperson, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm going to just summarize what has just been presented and my experience with the organization, especially in line with the finances and the audit and the performance. I can just start with when we started, the vacancies were the issue, Chair. Sorry. The critical positions in terms of the CFO position, the CEO positions were not occupied. So through that process, we first had to fill these positions of leadership. As we understand that if those positions are not occupied, we have a problem with the processes that has to be followed by subordinates. But in terms of the position, we managed to fill those positions and there was progress in terms of the files, in terms of the audit reports that we're receiving from AGSA, in terms of the performance improvement. Also, we had an issue with internal audit. Internal audit was outsourced, which means that we were dealing with a significant amount of fees because every time we needed assistance from them, they had to quote us on an invoice and we had to pay. So we managed to have those positions occupied within the organization. So we have now established our internal audit department within the organization, which now assures us that we have that consistent interactions in terms of findings, in terms of challenges and their address as we go on. So actually our audit reports from AGSA have continued to improve over the period, and we plan now to move from unqualified to a clean report. Because if you look at the issues that we used to have, they were all legacy issues. The irregular expenditures, unauthorized expenditures that we had currently were just payments on contracts that existed 3 or 4 years ago. There was nothing current that we were dealing with. So which means our controls efficiency has also improved significantly. And then if we go also to performance audit, if you look at the reports from the AG, it's not that the performance has not been achieved. What we're really working on significantly is the reporting and the recording of the issues, the accuracy of reporting, also the supporting documentation, because it's not always necessary that something has not been achieved, but they are failing to maybe produce the invoices or supporting documentation, the certificate, days to support this has actually been achieved, which is the process that we're working on and we've also improved significantly on. Also, the issues in terms of performance and risk, we have a good risk register where they identify the risk within the organization and also the environment around us, but also the financing of us implementing those controls to reduce those risks to an acceptable level or to remove them completely. That's also our challenge within the organization. But that doesn't stop us also from achieving those objectives. We could have done more in terms of the cleanup if the finances were allowing us. But what we always remind the organization is that we now need to work with the resources that we have. And we have made significant progress here. And we're looking forward to the report that is going to be released by the AGSA. Because even the previous year, we didn't have a lot of material and significant items. Those are the ones that is just an emphasis of which might lead to a qualification we have dealt with, which now we're definitely looking forward to a clean audit check. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Committee. We can now go back to the CEO. When the CEO is done, then the members will be able to ask questions to the Public Protector, Deputy Public Protector, Chair of the Audit Committee, and the executives. Back to you, CEO.
Thank you to the performance of the PPSA in 1920 financial year as well as the first quarter of the current year. The acting CFO will take us through the finances. I also have the COO who will be taking us through the revised APP for the current year. In this, our targets, 21% were not achieved. In terms of the details, under administration, we're targeted to approve and 100 phase two of the turnaround strategy, which we have achieved. In terms of finances, we had planned to review and implement the approved clean audit strategy. We were able to do that. The third target under administration was to secure two state-owned office accommodation in order for us to try and save funds on rental of office space. We were able to identify two state-owned office buildings, which one is in Mthatha, the other one in Triando. However, due to budgetary constraints, we could not be able to renovate those two structures because they are currently not habitable. However, renovation of one of the buildings, which is in Triando, is planned for the current year. In terms of our core, we had planned to finalize 7,000 cases for the 1920 financial year. The outcome is that we managed to finalize 11,743. We had an additional 4,643 finalized. We exceeded the target due to additional capacity of interns, which assisted in finalizing cases, especially those that are much simpler. We had interns that were deployed to us by SASETA. In terms of investigation reports published, we had planned to publish 56. However, we achieved 137 reports that were achieved. That is 81 more reports. We exceeded the target due to successful implementation of the backlog project, which had started, I think, over a year ago. So in 1920, we were able then to push and have more of reports published as opposed to the 56 that we had planned for. Continuing on investigations, we had planned to finalize all our matters within the turnaround time that I listed below. We're not able to achieve that target. Only 95% of the cases that we finalized were within the turnaround times. We were affected by the complexity of the matters and also capacity constraints in terms of the more skilled and more senior resources to deal with those complex matters. Continuing investigation still, we had also planned to complete 100% of our 2 years and older cases by the end of March. We couldn't. We only did 86%, which is 457 cases out of 532. The reason is similar. The complexity of the cases as well as the capacity constraints resulted into us not achieving 14% of our target. The next target was to identify and investigate two systemic investigations or interventions. We identified three instead, so we exceeded the target. The service delivery lapses that we identified, they prompted the third systematic investigation. We had further planned to have 10 dialogues with organs of state by the end of March. We succeeded in that. We had those 10 dialogues. In terms of our clinics or outreach programs, we had planned to conduct 208, but we eventually did 237 outreach clinics. The difference is 29. We were able to exceed the target due to collaborations with other stakeholders without incurring any costs. Further to that, we had planned to conduct 9 public protector roadshows, including national events by the end of the year. We were successful in that. We achieved those public protector roadshows. In terms of the third program, which is stakeholder management, we had planned to conduct 2 radio slots per province, and we were able to then do more than 2 in most of the provinces, and then in total we had 45 radio slots, which gives us an additional 27 or an extra 27. Those were free slots that were able to be afforded by radio stations, and we were able to be able to reach out to more communities in that regard. Continuing with stakeholder management, we had planned to enter into 1 bilateral agreement with an ombudsman institution. We were able to enter into a bilateral agreement with the CCMA. We had also planned to the public protector to chair 100% of scheduled IOC board meetings, which is the African Ombudsman Research Center. There were no board meetings that were planned during the period under review. And in terms of the public protector's president's role, she was supposed to chair all and attend all scheduled IOMA meetings, which we were able to do so. 2 of the IOMA Expo meetings were attended and chaired by the PP. Now, going to the current year's first quarter performance, as the PP indicated earlier, we achieved 70% of our plan targets. In the next slide, I'm talking to the details, starting with administration. We're supposed to review the clean audit strategy. We were able to successfully review that strategy in the first quarter. In terms of ICT, we're supposed to submit for approval the business case for the development of our mobile referral app, which we're able to do. That is 30% of the actual 100% we've planned for. And then in terms of core, we plan to finalize 14 investigation reports. We could not be able to finalize 14. We were only able to finalize 8. We were affected by the lockdown, as the PP spoke to that earlier, which resulted into delays from most of organs of state, impacting on the achievement of the target. But we have a catch-up plan in relation to that. The next target on investigations is to finalize 80% of our cases within the turnaround times. We were able to finalize 100% of the 560 matters that we finalized within the first quarter. We exceeded the target because of the efforts by the investigators and supervisors, as well as you will note that the target had reduced from the previous year, where it was at 100%. We had planned to finalize 20% of our 2 years and older cases, except GGI and very complex matters. We're at 22% by the end of the quarter, which is 121 cases. We exceeded the target due to focusing on finalizing older cases, which is a continuation of the project plan, which I spoke with to earlier. And then in terms of finalizing the 2 systematic investigations that had been identified in the previous year, the target is not yet due because the due date is the 31st of March, so we're not reporting on that target in the first quarter or in any of the quarters until the end of the year. We had planned 2 dialogues with organs of state. We're able to do that in the first quarter. In terms of stakeholder management, we had planned to conduct 52 clinics across the country. As the PP indicated, we had to suspend all our clinics due to the regulations and the restrictions on in terms of our lockdown as per the issues related to the pandemic. And then we also had planned to conduct a roadshow, including a Youth Day national event. We couldn't conduct that roadshow. We had planned a radio interview across 9 community radio stations. However, the premises where we're going to be hosted were affected, and they had to shut down due to a confirmed case of COVID-19. In terms of radio interviews, by the end of the quarter, we had planned 6. We eventually did 12. We're able to get 3 radio interviews, which enabled us to exceed our target, and we're also able to reach out to more communities in that regard. The next slide, still on stakeholder management. We're targeted to identify an ombudsman institution to enter into a bilateral agreement with. We're able to enter we're able to identify 3 institutions for potential bilateral agreements, which is Tshwane, City of Tshwane, Home Affairs, and Chipa. Public Protector to chair any scheduled IOF board meetings. There was no meeting scheduled in the first quarter. Public Protector to chair any scheduled IOMA meetings. There was no meeting scheduled in this regard on the first quarter of the financial year. Chairperson, thank you. I'll hand over to the acting CFO to take us through the finances.
Thank you very much, acting CEO. Afternoon, Chairperson and all the members of the portfolio committee. I will be presenting on the revenue as well as the expenditure performance of Public Protector for the previous financial year as well as the first quarter of the financial year, including the irregular expenditure as well as fruitless expenditures as well as the savings that we have recorded. In terms of the 2019 financial year, we recorded the total revenue of 368 million. In that revenue, our biggest revenue that we received from Department of Justice is the one that actually that is reflected. The rest are small revenue items. And then in terms of the expenditure by program, we've got the administration. The administration, we recorded an expenditure of 171 million. And then investigations, 183 million, which equates to the 50% of our total expenditure. Complaints and stakeholder management equals to 13.1 million. The total expenditure is 366 million. In terms of the expenditure by economic classification, compensation of employees equates to 253 million. Goods and services, 109 million converted. And then on that goods and services, there's a breakdown administration expenses of 83 million. Under that, we've got another expenditures is auditor's remuneration of 3.7 million, bank charges of 104,000, cleaning services of 2.5 million, rental office buildings of 11.9 million. In terms of the expenditure per quarter one, our approved budget for 2021 budget financial year is 266 million. As at the end of quarter one, we spent 59.7 million, and then we were at 22%. And then the goods and services is 2.6 million. We spent 13.6 million. We were at 19%. And then in terms of the depreciation, we couldn't run depreciation because in the first quarter of the financial year, we were still busy with the audit, so we couldn't run the depreciation because AG was still auditing the asset register. So should they find something that we needed to fix in the asset register, it will actually make the system to be wrong if we would have run it. So we had, normally every year, we have to wait for AG to run the depreciation, to audit. And then after they've audited, that's when we will run the depreciation. They just audited and finalized last week by the 30th of September. Then in terms of the irregular expenditures for the current, for the 2019-20 financial year, we've recorded irregular expenditures of 201,000. However, root causes identification resulting in non-compliance to laws and policy frameworks that triggers irregular expenditures was undertaken. And then prevention and detection controls have been strengthened on the first instance within the combined assurance levels and monitored as monthly disciplines. We've also strengthened the adequacy and effectiveness of controls, isolation of responsibilities and segregation of duties within supply chain and all the communities. And then in terms of the fruitless and wasteful expenditures for this, for 1920 financial, through internal assistance of internal audit and the controls that we have put in place, we've recorded the irregular expenditure of 30,000. All the transactions incurred under fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the 2019-20 financial year were finalized by our financial misconduct committee through the implementation of consequence management. The request for condonement to be submitted to National Treasury, and then the root cause identification resulting in internal control deficiency that triggers fruitless and wasteful expenditure was undertaken. Prevention and detection controls have been strengthened on the first instance and monitored as a monthly discipline. Then,
we are too fast. Members have to follow and also note issues that they would want to ask questions. You are too fast.
Okay, I apologize, Chair. I'll try to be slow. Thank you very much. Then in terms of the, I'll now be communicating the budget cuts that have been communicated with Public Protector South Africa. For 2020-21, the year that we are in, Treasury has communicated with us. They are cutting our budget from the cost of employment, which is our employee. They are cutting our budget with 16.1 million. And then for 2021-22, from the cost of employee, they are cutting 63.6 million. And then the goods and services, they are cutting 9 million. The total cut for 2021-22 is 72 million. And then for 2022-23, the cost of employment, they are cutting 80.8 million. And then for from that, the goods and services part of it is 15.9. And then the total of it in 22-23 is 96.4. And then in 2023-24, the cut only on goods and services is 23 million. Then overall, the budget cut amounts to 209 million when we combine all the figures that I've been mentioning from 2021 to 2023-24. And then the budget cuts for 2021, the 16 million that I was referring to, has been confirmed by Treasury. However, the outer years from 2021-22 onwards still to be confirmed. Yes, they've presented those cuts for us, but they haven't been confirmed. But the 16 million has been communicated with us. And then our original budget amounted to 266 million, like I've presented in the previous slide, and then 280 million and 290 million in 2021-22 and 2022-23, respectively. National Treasury proposed budget reduction on COE that amounts to 160.6 million, and then the difference is from the goods and services between 2021 and 2022-23. They've indicated that we must not implement of living adjustments in order for us to absorb this 16.1 million, except for medical aid increases, housing allowances, and notch progressions. However, if the budget reductions are implemented, PPSA assistance will significantly overspend on the COE because, as it stands, that budget consists of the warm bodies of the people that we are having in our payroll. And then in terms of the savings or additional expenditures that we identified in our first quarter, savings on the job evaluation amounted to 419,000. I'll talk about the details. And then the closure of offices, if you can go up, the closure of offices, 215,000. And then savings on APP targets not implemented in quarter one, it's 1.2 million. However, yes, we are saying we are having savings, but in additional, we don't really have savings because we have the expenditures that we have to incur because now we are no longer doing road shows. We are no longer doing outreach because of the pandemic. So we have to actually make sure that we achieve our APP targets, whereby we have our webinars and radio slots, which will cost us 1.1 million. And then we also have an expenditure on the COVID-19, which was initially budgeted for 881. So in nutshell, this thing about there on top is actually not savings because they'll have to be saving, they'll have to be assisting to account for the webinars as well as the expenditure on COVID-19. Then the details of how we have savings on job evaluation is as a result of us doing a reviewing our structure, whereby manager posts were downgraded from level 12 to level 11, assistant manager position downgraded from level 10 to 9, secretary posts from 6 to 5, personal assistance from level 9 to 7. And then when the vacancies are filled at this the revised grade levels, and then so far we have realized the value of we have realized the savings to the value of 119,000 in this current financial year, and then future savings are estimated to be 2.5 million as people will still be phasing out in terms of them moving or resigning from the organization. Sorry, CFO, can you go back up? CEO? We skipped. Yes, thank you. And yet, oh, thank you. Yeah, savings on the closure of office again continue. In 2018-19, we terminated the lease in one of our office that we are having at the head office occupied by some of the employees that we are having around, but we've since relocated that employees to our main building. And then the lease on the buildings will have amounted to 4.5 million per year, which would have resulted in an over expenditure as the goods and services budget was adequate in 2018-19. The budget did not cover all the contractual obligations. And then in December 2019, the Kuruman office was also closed due to underutilization of the services. The affected employees were relocated to the Kimberley Provincial Office. Savings on the Kuruman office amounted to 200,000 per year. However, we are still busy trying to get a satellite office for that particular area to still show our footprint within that area. And then the savings on the Kuruman office has been reallocated to within the goods and services as our budget has been reduced for many years. And then I would like to communicate to the portfolio committee indicating that the impact of the baseline reductions, the cuts that I've been talking about, starting from the 16.1 million that I've talked about, over the years we've been struggling to stay afloat. And then we've been approaching our sister department to assist in terms of financials in order to assist us to honor our liabilities. They've been assisting us, but now we are worried this year because all of us have suffered this cut as it stands. We are not sure whether they will be able to assist this year. And then PPSA budget allocation is already contained as it only covers personnel and contractual obligation within the institution. As for essential services, we are a labor-intensive institution. Investigators conduct investigations based on the complaints lodged. The COA budget assistance cannot be reduced as it consists of home bodies. And then the impact of non-payment of cost living adjustments will to low staff morale and push back as employees will be faced with financial difficulties. And then investigative staff alone cannot function without the administration and corporate services. Next slide. The budget cuts will be detrimental and the following will happen if it continues, especially This year, we can try to still to survive with the cuts of the 16 million. But for the other outer years, the contracts and existing commitments may not be honored. The discontinuation of essential support and corporate services as well as lawsuits will be heading towards the public protector South Africa. The already constrained budget for goods and services cannot fund the budget for shortfall as this will lead to non-achievement of our mandate. Because over the years we've been struggling or we've been suffering the cuts, and the only time we were able to cut was on goods and services, but now it's actually catching with us as it stands, because now we don't know where we can cut for now as it stands. And then we will be unable to maintain operational costs of all offices, and some of the offices may need to shut down. We will not be able to achieve the 2021 PP targets. We will have service disruption, and the PP herself will effectively be unable to comply with her constitutional mandate to investigate, report, take remedial action, and be accessible. And then we'll also be having a direct adverse impact on citizens' constituencies emphasized in the sections mentioned above. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies, I was struggling to unmute. The next slide talks to personnel-related matters. As an organization, we've got 582 positions in our organizational structure. However, 360 of those are funded. We are sitting with a 38% vacancy rate, which makes it difficult for us to fulfill our mandate. even though we have revised our structure, the substantial reduction in the total numbers from 707 to 582, we have a total number of 231 that remain unfunded, of which 115 of those are investigation posts. Currently, most of the vacated positions have not been filled because of budget constraints going far as back as 2017 financial year. There's currently a high demand for the PPSA complaint handling resources to ensure efficiencies at each stage of the investigation process. Not only are the types of complaints becoming increasingly complex and time critical, but judicial scrutiny of every aspect of the standard and quality of our investigation caused by the increased judicial reviews puts a high demand on the progression of skills and time required by investigations to handle cases. The lack of funding is seriously affecting essential systems and tools of trade to support our investigations efficiency. Even though the commitment of the PPSA staff is beyond reproach, the reality on the ground is that it impacts adversely on the well-being of our workforce. Outsourcing of investigations may assist to improve efficacy. However, it is costly and also has a tendency of transferring skills outside of the institution, as such, deprives the PPSA of the necessary exposure to sharpen their investigative skills. We had already dealt with the findings by the internal audit. The next part then would be the revised APP targets for the current year, which will be handled by the COO. Mr. Mohalapa, over to you.
Thank you, Acting CEO. I will deal with the revised targets. The Chairperson and members, the 2025 strategy plan and the 2021 annual performance report were tabled to the committee on the 16th of March 2020. And obviously, following the national lockdown and its implications, only the 2021 annual performance plan was revised and tabled to the portfolio committee on the 14th of August 2020. We will now proceed to present the targets for the financial year 2021 in terms of the APP targets that were revised. Chairperson, slide 58 of the presentation deals with the targets in respect of the administration program, and I think members will be able and that in terms of the quarter two, that target was revised not to deal with the percentage of 25% in respect of the implementation of the clean audit strategy. Similarly, we have also reviewed the target for quarter three, as we are now in quarter three, which is the first month of the quarter three within the financial year. That has now been revised 50% in terms of the implementation of the clean audit strategy. But I think as an organization, certainly the target, overall target, is to ensure that by the end of the financial year, being quarter four, we should be looking at 100% implementation of the clean audit strategy. I think the our view is that in the middle of the current financial year, we have been severely impacted by the AG audit processes, which dealt with the issues around the review of the target. Slide 59, Chairperson, deals with the issues around and targets around emissions. The review of the targets being 50, from 50 to about 41 for the 2020-2021 financial year, and the detail thereof being in quarter two, quarter three, as well as quarter four. If you look at the slide, we are now looking at about finalizing about four and publishing about four investigation reports in quarter two. We're also looking at the target of about finalization and publishing of the investigation reports, which is about 12 for quarter three. And certainly for quarter four, we're looking at finalizing and publishing about 11 investigation reports. I think what has really necessitated the review of these targets is obviously the disruptions around the hard lockdown, which was announced by the government. And as an organization that has presence in the various provinces, most of the provincial office obviously had to shut down, and we could not therefore finalize and submit reports to the PP for signature. Specifically in respect of the first quarter. So certainly most of these targets for quarter one have not been met due to the COVID outbreak and the unintended consequences in relation to the announcement of the hard lockdown being level 5. This members was also has also affected our ability to have meetings, to receive documents, especially large documents that have to do with investigations that we're currently handling in relation to some complex matters. It also affected the subpoena hearings that we would have loved to call during the lockdown period, as most of the government departments were actually, and state-owned entities were actually also observing the lockdown regulations. But I must say, Chairperson, that at the current rate, there has been a lot of improvement in how we conduct our business. Most of our meetings are being held using virtual platforms, including conducting of subpoena hearings. Hence, we are quite confident that the targets which have been set to be met for quarter three and four are indeed going to be met under the current prevailing circumstances. While we sought to deal with, Chairperson, the numbers in relation to the reports that we were going to issue, the next slide certainly deals with the periods that we have set for ourselves, because the original target really bordered on the following percentages, which was about 80%, which of the cases that were supposed to be finalized in respect of the various timelines we had set for ourselves. The early resolution matters, the original timeline was obviously the about 6 months period. Service delivery matters, we had set ourselves a target of about 12 months to finalize those matters. Good governance matters and integrity, those we had set a target of about 24 months to be finalized. And very complex matters, we set ourselves a target of about 36 months to finalize those. The review then necessitated that we really look into the issues of the timelines. Because members will note that we're receiving a number of complaints as an office, both in the provinces as well as head office, and that really looked necessitated that we have a discussion and look at reviewing the numbers. The proposed revised targets in this instance are now looking at the increase in the turnaround times. As members can note from the slide, that we have now increased from 6 months to about 9 months in respect of the early resolution matters. We are now looking at 10 months for service delivery matters, 30 months for the TGI matters, as well as 36 months by the 31st of March 2020, the good governance and integrity matters, which are maybe considered as complex matters. We are also looking at the same number of deliverables in terms of the revised targets in as far as investigations is concerned. The next slide also deals with issues around the percentages of the finalization of the matters that are 2 years and older. And I think committee members will obviously note that we have got some cases which are 2 years and older, which we're now focusing on and finalizing and giving much attention into the finalization of those matters. And the original target was the finalization of about 80% of those matters that are 2 years and older. and within the organization, we have now revised the percentage of 80% to about 60%. And as the quarters will continue, we're now in the third quarter. We're now looking at finalization of about 50% of those cases. And incrementally, in quarter four, we're also looking at about 60% of those cases that should be finalized, being the original target of about 80%. So we're quite resilient in our efforts to ensure that, despite the fact that we do have cases that are 2 years and older, certainly our efforts are going to increase.
My apology. Chairperson, can I get your attention? Chair?
Yes, I'm listening.
I'm sorry. I'm just worried about the time because we are now on slide 61 of 71. It's over an hour listening to the presentation. Can we get a sense of time, Chair? Otherwise, it's really going beyond.
No, thank you very much. Can we give you 5 minutes to round up?
Thank you, Chairperson. So we're just reflecting on the percentage which have been reduced in respect of the investigations. Slide number 62, Chairperson, as members can observe, that we're also intending to conduct about 208 outreach clinics as led by the PP. That target has now been removed from the current APP. Obviously due to the lockdown restrictions, because the risk which is associated with this specific target is that we may have unintended consequences of increasing the level of infection within our communities. The next one, Chair, is we're looking at an increment of the radio interviews as a result of the cancellation of outreach programs. Our view is that we can certainly reach out to most communities using this medium. And certainly over time in the current financial year, we have observed that this has proved to be effective. So due to the cancellation of the outreach program, we are really going to really put much more focus on using the radio media of communication to reach out to the communities, including making sure that the pillars as identified by the PTI, indeed communicated to the public in the manner that we wish to deal with our service offerings. Slide number 64 deals with the roadshows, which have now been cancelled due to the COVID issues. We are now in a position to confirm before the portfolio committee that we are looking at having about five webinars. I must say, Chairperson, that the progress in relation to this target is quite commendable, as we any challenges in terms of the meeting of this target in the current financial year. Chairperson, I think in as far as the revised target for the current financial year, that will conclude our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. Chair, the part that is left is a request for the additional funding. If you may allow us to take you through the next three slides. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll actually try to run as fast as I can. Over and above the gripping picture that I've painted in regards to the cuts in the budget, we've further requested portfolio committee, maybe even Treasury, to actually listen to us in terms of our additional funding request, whereby we are requesting 16 million for the 33 positions that have been reduced since 2017-18 as a result of the budget cuts. And then we also request 10 million for subject matter experts, whereby this is currently a significant demand for subject matter experts when executing complex investigations that require specialized skill areas. We further request the training of 3.9 million, training for employees, both investigative and support staff. We also request funding for e-library, LexisNexis, access to tools of trade, information and data resources for tools of trade, which is used for subscriptions on law online library, as well as the electronic case management assistance. We do most of our cases manual. We don't have case management system. Personal protective clothing, we didn't budget for it. It was it is calculated at 881,000. Currently, our sellers don't have insurance as it stands. We're requesting an amount of 120. Security, only the head office is having the security. All the province and regional offices don't have security. And recently, we've been experiencing breaking, especially during the time of the lockdowns, whereby we were waiting in from homes. And then funding of capped leave, 1.3 million. Staff who were seconded from Department of Justice in the establishment of the Public Protector Office carried over leave accumulated from the department, which is an expense as it is not budgeted for. And then employee health and wellness, 266,000. Yes, we do have an employee's wellness, but it's only certain components. It's only covering certain components as a result of the budget cuts. Thank you, Chairperson. The total budget that we are requesting is 54.5 million. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, I think we are done.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are done, and we will await the questions, and DPP will assist me in answering some of the questions, and the acting CEO and the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you remove the slide so that I can be able to see members who have ears? Thank you very much. Ms. Can you indicate if you want to make an input, question, or comments? Okay, I have Honorable Glenis Bredenbach, Honorable Horn, Honorable Liago, Honorable Swart, Honorable Jelle, Honorable Ngola,
Velma,
Honorable Velma. Yes, in that order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like, please, specific information regarding litigation costs.
the number and status of review applications and the associated litigation costs for those. But specific information, nothing general, please. Then in the matter of the government employees medical scheme versus the public protector, I would ask the public protector to comment in general on the judgment, but in particular I need her to deal with, please, the finding that the public protector misconceived her powers, but in many respects her approach is regrettable, that comment by the court. A finding that the public protector officials eschewed reason for coercion, the antithesis of what the office is designed to do. Her comments on that finding, please. And with regards to section 6.9, I would be interested to know what kind of special circumstances might persuade the public protector to investigate a matter that is more than 2 years old, specifically bearing in mind the serious picture that has just been painted of a shortage of funds and a shortage of human resources. And then the public protector's comment, please. The Constitutional Court found in the Reserve Bank case that the public protector has a heightened duty to respect the law and to fulfill procedural requirements and to tread carefully when dealing with rights. The Supreme Court of Appeal has flagged this as a concern. I would just like a comment to the public protector, please. Thank you.
Thank you. If I may ask Honourable Glenys Breedenbach your first question about the list of cases, do you want it in writing or do you want it now?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd be very happy to receive it in writing. It's no problem. As long as it's done within a reasonable period.
Okay, thank you very much. Honourable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Maybe to firstly address the issue of the litigation costs and review application. It is as so that there was previous requests to the public protector to, on a regular basis, inform the committee of the list of review applications she is defending and the costs involved up to at the date of the different reports. So possibly we must also inquire as to why that undertaking has not been met. Chair, but my questions, firstly, a few in terms of the, let's say, the administration of the Office of the Public Protector. Previously, we were informed that they would be made headway with doing away with acting positions in terms of the senior management, yet we have today again an acting CEO and an acting CFO, and I didn't at the time catch whether the COO in fact is a new appointment or also acting. These positions have been advertised in March, so it would be good to hear as to why no appointments has been made up to now. Also then, in terms of the administration of the office, case management, we informed that due to budgetary constraints, the State Security Agency assisted with the development of a case management system. Yet, we see that the Internal Audit Committee made specific findings that seemingly the system is not working, because there is huge delays in registering new cases and in communicating with complainants and ultimately with getting the wheels rolling with investigations. So what is happening there in respect of case management? It seems to be a perpetual problem that is simply not solved. Then, Chair, in respect of disciplinary processes, previously we were informed that, because if I remember correctly, the public protector is of the view that she's very strict on internal discipline and adherence to all the laws of the country and good governance, that there is an above average amount of suspensions, disciplinary hearings, and terminations. So if we could also get, and I possibly that would not be available today, but by way of written feedback, then details as to in this past financial year, how many officials of the Office of the Public Protector in South Africa were at some stage suspended, for what periods, how many disciplinaries were undertaken, and how many of these ended in termination of employment ultimately. Then, Chair, in respect of the COVID-19 related investigations, we took note of if I recall correctly, a media statement from the public protector indicating that she experiences frustration with people who she has information from, indicating that they are answering to the SIUs busy with investigations in terms of a proclamation, et cetera, et cetera, and that she then indicated that they are duty-bound to answer questions. And I'm not taking issue with that, but what I want an answer on is that we've been constantly informed that also due to budgetary constraints, there is very specific systems in place to prevent an overlap in investigations between different role players dealing with possible corruption and maladministration. So I want to know why the public protector, given that there was really, if one has to be brutally honest, a very speedy proclamation issued to the SIU in this regard, why has the public protector decided to, in a parallel way, embark on her own investigation regarding COVID-19-related corruption, possible corruption and maladministration? Then, Chair, in respect of the vacancy rates and the costs to personnel, I'm not quite sure, and I hope that there's an error in the report and the slides. Slide 37 says there's no variance in respect of the personnel costs, but then it's reported that there's a 38% vacancy rate. It's not quite clear whether the vacancy rate is calculated based on the 582 positions on the revised organogram or on the 360 funded positions. If it's on the 360 funded positions, then of course the vacancy rate is really 61% and not 38%. Now that in itself is very worrying. I mean, there's simply no way an institution like the Public Protector could function properly if it is a 61% vacancy rate based on the funded positions. And I would venture to say even if it is a 38% vacancy rate on the funded positions, then similarly it is must be of a big concern. And what we must ask is if you're exposed to such a vacancy rate, how on earth is it then possible to, by way of payment to personnel, dispose of every cent in your budget that has been set aside for personnel costs? That simply doesn't make sense. If irrespective of how you calculate the vacancy rate, there should have been a huge under expenditure in respect of personnel costs. So that needs an explanation, please, Chair. And then lastly, I also want to deal with a specific investigation, and that's the Istina matter or the Frieda Dairy matter. So of late, I know it is sort of the accepted version is that the public protector undertook to investigate the possible role of politicians in this matter from about middle of 2019. Fact of the matter, however, is that at a portfolio committee meeting of April 2018, she undertook after the portfolio committee criticizing her for not looking into the role of politicians to look into the role of politicians. So at best for her, it's now an investigation that is outstanding for 15 months. At worst for her, it's one of those who's older than 2 years. In January this year, she informed the country that this investigation into the role of politicians were, and I quote her, in an advanced stage. Now, end of September, she tells us that no, there's been a complications in respect of this matter, a delay because the politicians are asking for extensions. That's the one issue I think that needs to be addressed is what is happening here? How can it be in an advanced stage, even promises made towards the middle of the year that it's due for release, and then in September we informed that no, there's now complications and a delay. That's the one issue. The second issue is, what is the personal involvement of Ms. Mokgobane in this investigation? Given the fact that it is known, published on social media, that one of the politicians who should be investigated in this regard, and hopefully is being investigated in this regard, the then MEC for Agriculture in the Free State, Mr. Zwane, was a guest on at her 50th birthday party. And I want to know, given that information, whether she is personally involved with this investigation, and if so, whether she should not have considered when she invited him as a guest to her 50th birthday party to recuse herself from that investigation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Yako.
Enkosi kakhulu, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think I need to reiterate the fact that I'm quite new in this portfolio committee. However, I feel that I cannot not have input. I don't think you know, but in 2017 and 18, I was MPAC Chairperson in Nelson Mandela Bay. And I think some of the issues that the public prosecutor highlighted speak to some of the issues that we highlighted at municipal level at the time, which bothers me just a little bit. I'm happy that they spoke about grassroots issues that they were going after. And I think that's where the issues, the real proper issues are, at grassroots level. That is where most atrocities happen. That is where people feel most hopeless. And I'm happy that they highlighted that they have looked into those and they are paying attention to those. Thirdly, I'm happy that they've highlighted issues where they want us to advocate for them in terms of the budget, in terms of allowing them to do the work that they want to do. I think that the PP seeking assistance from Parliament to intervene is one of the highest and most respectable ways that I could respect her office, because this is what we're here to do. And when she wants us to assist her, I feel that this is the only platform that she has to do that. So I appreciate it. And I feel that perhaps what she has highlighted as her issues in terms of budgeting, in terms of access, in terms of other issues that she did highlight, she should put it in writing. And whichever party wants to advocate for her, and I think as the EFF we will do that, she should be able to do that freely without favour. And I would encourage her to do that, even if she writes specifically to myself. I'm available, and I feel very passionate about what the department does and what her office does, so much so that I feel that it's a cause that is worth taking on. Fourthly, I think that, you know, there's so much maladministration in municipalities, and it's because it's due to political interference. Even though they have the structures such as MPAC, structures such as internal audit, such as your audit committees, but there's always political interference, which renders the public protector's office useless. in terms of consequence management. So the public protector could say that she would like this and she recommends that. But if there is no political will from the municipalities, also from parliament, then that means that there's nothing that will be done. And that bothers me also, because there's a lot more that needs to be done, especially at grassroots level. And I feel that parliament has no teeth enough to do the work in terms of, I can pick up a call as a member of parliament and say that I have an issue with something and that gets done. But at municipal level, I have the ability to say, I have an issue with a drain that is not being looked after. And it's been escalated to a point where it's now at the public protector's office and it gets looked after. So I think that we do need to take her office very seriously. I think we need to look at supply chain and how supply chain has not evolved. It's 2020 and we're still looking at supply chain being, you know, I remember in Nelson Mandela Bay, we went to see how they file their offices. And maybe the PP can look into that. It's in a room. So someone can burn that room, and when you burn the room, nothing will happen because now you don't have files. And I feel that there's a way in which we can digitalize supply chain movement such that it actually can be accessible to anyone. So if I want to see how a tender of water arrived in the Northern Cape, and in Pokwane, I have the access to it via digital platform. It cannot be that we have filing systems within supply chain that are still in boxes, still paper trails, without it being electronic such that we can access it. When it burns down, we have no access to it. And that is the gist of our issue. And that is why when the AG goes to municipalities and goes and investigates, there is no paper trail and they're not given information enough to do the work that they do. So there are many issues that I have, I think, with the Office of the Public Protector, and I feel that we have not respected her office enough. We have not respected the Auditor General enough. I think that as Parliament, we need to do better in enforcing that we respect that office, because for us to respect the office, that's how we seek accountability. And we cannot be Jesus Christ and be three bodies and God and the Christ and the Holy Spirit. Therefore, we cannot be everywhere. However, we can enforce that we have access to the information that we seek. And for us to have the access to the information that we seek is for us to digitalize the system. And lastly, yes, I think that we need to respect the office of the public protector. I think that we need to not respect her office as a human being, but respect the office in terms of in its office and as to what they do. And it appalls me that they speak about staff supplement to this day, because they should have enough staff supplement. Parliament should endorse that they have enough budget to do the job that they do, because it's very crucial to the work that we do. And I think that's a compliment that I have, and that's I think the gist of what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Noma Temba Maseko Jele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And then also, firstly, I just want to thank the Chairperson of the AG for the good report that they have given. Also, the internal audit. I think it is a good idea that we need to involve them, so that whilst we hear from the department for the institution, we also hear from the AG chairperson, so that we can assist. I think the report that they have issued today, both internally and the chairperson, it is really encouraging. It makes one to say, indeed, the committee needs, the institution has to be assisted. Otherwise, what is the role? What is the use of having the office of the PP? Because the most important work that they are doing, it is on the ground, Chairperson. And we all know what is happening on the ground. I'm so disappointed by the report that the organ of the state are the ones that are giving her problems when it comes to the implementation of the remedial reports. I think that is the area also that we need to engage. And if we can be assisted by the institution to get the list of those departments, I think it is within our mandate that we have to follow up on those on these issues. Because if we don't do the chairperson, indeed, there is no use of having this office of the public protector. Because we know exactly where we come from, some of us. There's still a lot that needs to be done. So if we don't, indeed, in echoing the words of the previous speaker, that if you don't support them, there's no way that we are going to see the results change on the ground, especially on the issues of service delivery. And on the issue of position, chairperson, it's really worrisome. Because these positions, I think the reason why the public protector will request that we support her, that the budget, the funds that she's requesting, that she must get them, it is precisely because of these acting positions. And if these acting positions are not filled, why do we sit here and criticize that they are not doing the work, that they are not responding to the cases that we want them to respond to? I think it is important that indeed let's support her to get the money so that she can fill those positions. Then we can be able to come and why this is not done. And then also, chairperson, I would also request more information on the issues of disciplinary. That one, we need to know these people that are really letting us down. Whilst we are working so hard in making sure that this office gets a clean report, as the chairperson indicated. So, I think that is the issue that we need to look into and make sure that we get the report and hear who are the people. But in coming to the end, Chair, without saying a lot, I think I'm satisfied with the report that you have given and the report of the performance. Especially because the AG is sitting in that office working literally, I mean assisting to make sure that they do their job. And I liked how they went the issue of the internal report and also the AG. When I could feel that this office chairperson, they are willing to listen and change the situation. So if you are working with a staff of that kind, it is encouraging to say, even if we talk here in this committee and correct them, we are definitely sure, knowing exactly that next time when they come and report, they would have corrected those issues. So that is why I'm saying on the issue of positions, let's see if maybe they get that money. Can we support them to get the money once more? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mona.
Noko akubikho sidingo ndiphinde obese kuthethiwe ngoxa bam. But all I want to say now is that I agree with Honorable Jele when she says we have at some point been fighting correctly so with the Public Protector's Office, but I think for now, I want to highlight some two issues which are reflecting from the report, which is the investigations and the stakeholder management, which mostly we have noticed that they have exceeded the targets they set. It's a good and commendable work, which I think must be set as a benchmarking so that they are able to set more and different targets. Because it seems like the office is able to meet targets to an extent of exceeding the target they set. So I think it must just be a lesson that the office is able to do more, and it must benchmark from this report. And in the when they need to set targets again, they must have benchmarks so that we don't have consistently low targets. The another issue, Chair, is with the regards to the Auditor General findings, which says a lot of things that have happened in terms of the findings, and says the management has resolved these matters. I want to check with that regard, Chair, if they resolved these matters includes the consequence management to those who have been at the center of these transgressions. Because when you say it has been resolved, you must be able to tell us how has it been resolved so that we don't take matters for granted. So there's an issue about 38% the vacancy rate. I still remember, Chair, we had a very special committee meeting that was to deal with the organizational structure of the Public Protector South Africa, where the committee itself approved the organizational structure, which was at some point had some reductions in terms of the previous structure that was done in terms of posts. I want to check with regard to this. I get the 72 million budget cuts and the request for budget increment. But I want to check that with regard specifically with the filling of vacancies, has there been an engagement between the Public Protector's Office and the National Treasury with regard to this matter? If yes, there's been some engagement, what has been the response from the National Treasury, so that when we are to make some necessary interventions, we must at least take where they left and how the National Treasury had given responses to their request, if there are any requests that we made to the National Treasury. The last thing, Chair, would be throughout the lockdown, there's been enormous work done by government of South Africa in trying to curb in a number of times, been commending the work that was done by government and ensuring that this is guided thoroughly so that we don't have too much damage out of COVID-19. But whilst that work was done, there was a very serious detour from that work, which is coronavirus corruption. I would want to check, Chair, if are there cases the Public Protector's Office is presiding over which emanate from coronavirus cases? If yes, can we be given just a brief report of the progress to those cases? If there are cases that were reported to the office with regard to coronavirus corruption, so that we are able to keep this third pandemic together. I thank you very much, sir. That was all.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nivod Drakens.
Sorry, Chair, I hope you haven't forgotten.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Nivod Drakens.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Office of the Public Protector for your presentation. Good afternoon to everybody present. I have just a few questions. The public protector mentioned the ease of access to public protector services and the using radio stations. I would like to say I'm very sorry. Ease of access for people who are deaf through the radio is impossible. We cannot get the information about public protector services from the radio. We cannot hear. We need TV or paid webinars. To date, I mean, during September month, it was Deaf Awareness Month, and the Deaf Association, DEFSA, hosted webinars regularly, very successfully. And I would like the public protector to consider that if you have webinars, to put a sign language interpreter on the webinar and then distribute the information that, you know, you're having this webinar or put it on TV. So please don't only consider the radio stations. Deaf people also need access to your office's services just like other citizens. Secondly, I would like to know in relation to the downgrading of posts, do you have a reason why the positions were downgraded, or is the downgrading happening only after the post is vacant? So is the person, is the incumbent getting the post downgraded, or is it only after the post becomes vacant? Next, in terms of employee health and wellness, 266 million rands. Do you perhaps have a breakdown of how this money is spent under employee health and wellness? What kind of programs do you have under that, you know, under employee health and wellness? And then what is my last question? There have been many complaints during the lockdown regarding the social relief funding and many grievances regarding this. Has the public protector met with the Department of Social Development to discuss these grievances? And if there was such a meeting, were such meetings, could you please inform us of the outcomes? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. It will be Honourable Judge Chief, followed by Honourable Swart.
Thank you very much. I just want to raise a couple of issues, Chair, in addition to my questions and comments, perhaps just to table some few suggestions. And maybe also just make a declaration. But where I want to start, Chair, is where you started, because I don't want to be in a confusion. When you started, you said that this report is the fourth quarter report of 2019-20 and the first quarter report of 2020-2021. But what has been presented here, Chair, well, it's important that the clarity is very, very clear. This is information that is in the annual report of the public protector. But, Chair, as you would know, we have not yet received the annual report of the public protector. Given what we know about the fact that the AG is only going to be able to do this end of this coming month. So as we sit here, we don't have an annual report, but we have information presented in their presentation that comes out of that. And for that reason, Chair, that we don't have that report, I'm not going to get into those issues. In fact, I'm going to ask what the public protector says is the 79% achievement. For her to hold that back until we get to that point, we're not there yet, because that 79% is part of the annual report, and it is not here today. We're focusing on two quarters in terms of this. And in fact, what we have received here is a report from the audit committee and the internal audit. So it's important that we combine those three things, the his report, the audit committee report, and the management report of the public protector's office when we do that annual report. I thought I must make that distinction, Chair, so that today's we're not seen as kind of duplicating the issues. And I want, before I get to my second point, perhaps on a lighter note, I want to check with the public protector, because in terms of the annual performance plan of 2019-2020, just on those eight pillars, public protector, there is a pillar that says projecting ourselves in this annual performance plan. It says projecting ourselves as a safe haven for the poor. I see that you have changed that today. You have introduced a notion of a stronghold. So I'm looking at that difference, because we're reading what you're presenting to us, and I'm hoping it's not coming with a meaning, because the two are not the same. The issue of a safe haven and the stronghold. It's important. I thought I must make that point on a lighter note, that if, because when the COO presented revised targets, that was not reflected, and so I kind of noticed it. Chair, the public protector, in her presentation, the introduction slides, and I must say there are about 15 of those slides from the public protector. And I have picked up, Chair, and this is something I want, I've decided that I can't ignore what she's raising. Because she, in those slides, there is a lot of issues that the public protector is complaining about. And I don't think we should ignore her concerns and what she complains about. Because I had a sense reading through that, and like whether the public protector is in a happy space and whether some people are not taking it seriously. I've just noted about five of those complaints that come out of that. Two are kind of complaints that were shared with us. The issue of the budget cuts, and I think we have been attending to that. The issue of the budget cuts as part of the suggestion, Chair, even when we met with the NPA yesterday, we have committed as this committee that we're going to have to attend to those issues. There's also a complaint about the issue, as Norma Jelle said, the organs of state. And she even mentioned some of them by name, like your Northwest, Tshwane, and Home Affairs. I think the other speaker did say that it was important that we get a proper report and proper list of those organs of state that seem not to take this office seriously. And then you had three paragraphs, Chair, of the nature of complaint from the public protector about the National Prosecuting Authority. Three paragraphs, I've taken note of that. And the public protector raises a matter. Now, I don't know what matter she is raising in this, that she needs assistance from this committee. I want to offer a suggestion there, Chair, on this issue of an NPA, because I'm expecting that the public protector, as part of a stakeholder management, would have convened a meeting with NPA, and there's nothing here that says that has happened. So that it goes beyond the writing and the letters, because NPA is a stakeholder. I think that they need to sit down. I don't think this is a point where the parliamentary committee must come in on this issue. They must be able to sit down as stakeholders and thresh out these issues. You then, Chair, have another key complaint as I conclude those, the set of complaints, where the public protector says there are certain organs of state that have got forensic investigations, right? And those forensic investigations gather dust. And she proceeds and say it should like to initiate enforcement of those. Now, I'm a bit worried about, because the public protector that I know does not have the capability of forensic as kind of a resources. And I don't know which are these kind of departments that are not doing this. So I don't, I have worried with that. Then the last complaint, Chair, relates to the overdose state that are being malicious to the public protector. Those that are malicious are the organs of state that she must name and shame, because they don't even respond to the remedial action, they just keep quiet. And so again, there, we need to know what are those organs of state, so that it's not a generalized kind of a situation. Let me move to my next point, Chair. One of the complaints that I was expecting that the public protector would raise, which is a complaint that she needed to raise about her own office, but I've missed that one. And let me reference that, Chair, with the Constitutional Court judgment between the public protector as well as South African Reserve Bank. They had this to say on paragraph 207. That the public protector's entire model of investigation was flawed. This is the Concord judgment on this office. And I'm here getting on the issue of investigation, because this, and this is the declaration I want to make. The public protector's office, for me, is about investigation. And I've taken this as an issue that I really want to follow. So when you have Concord saying that, but a few months ago, a month or two, the public protector seemed to have a grievance of her own about her own investigators who did not do competent work in relation to some of these investigations, and some would have been suspended. And I wanted to share that, because I think that for me is kind of very serious. And in relation to that, Chair, I want to request the following information from the public protector, perhaps in writing, Chair, because this is information I would have asked from the minister. But if I ask this information from the minister tomorrow, in terms of our rules, I will get this information in 10 days. But if the public protector can take notes, the following information. One would like to know the kind of set of skills that is required by the public protector in terms of the investigators, and you compare that with the set of skills that is available of investigators in your office as we speak. What is the caseload per investigator that you have, a caseload? The performance of each of those investigators, and for each investigator, do you have investigators that have been continuing writing the set-aside reports? Because here it gets to be your consequence management issues. And I'd like that to be attached. And whether, because in the absence of the annual report, I could not get this, and whether what are the bonuses and promotion that have been offered to some of these investigators? The last point, Honorable Horn covered it. How many of them have been suspended, these investigators? Because this office, the core business of this office is investigation. And then, again, I think Honorable Horn attended to this point when she met with us in June. We and even last year, we said the issue of litigation cost, we're very worried about it. And then we said we needed the office to update us on these kind of issues. As we sit here, since then, we have not received any update on the issues of litigation, including in the presentation itself. Then, Chair, let me go to the audit committee, my second last point, the audit committee. I have a simple question to the audit committee, Chair. To the chair of the audit committee, is the audit committee, what you have presented here today, is that all as the audit committee? That's one simple question I want to ask from the audit committee. And then in terms of the targets, on quarter one of 2020-2021, I'm very worried about this, because there's a double speak on quarter one. Quarter one, as I understand it, it is April, May, and June of 2020. That is quarter one. And those 3 months of quarter one, we were at the peak of your lockdown. You had level five and level four. So when they present, Chair, both the CEO and everybody else, they said, we could not achieve this because of lockdown. But in the scoring, we are told of 70% in quarter one. I'm very curious. The two don't match, Chair. Because if I were to take you to quarter one in terms of the annual performance plan and list the kind of issues, finalize the 14 investigation reports, finalize 80% of cases within the following turnaround time, those with 6 months, with 12 months, with 24 months, and so the list goes on. I thought I would want the Public Protector's Office to be candid with us. Are you able to achieve 70% of quarter one, April, May, June of 2020, the one you are saying in the very same report you are highly affected by COVID? And if it is so, then it is a brilliant performance that you have. I would really want you to respond to that issue. And then the issue of the vacancies, my last point, Chair, on the vacancies. You have 38% vacancies, and other colleagues have covered this. But here is the thing, and I'm curious about this, and the audit committee was speaking to this, but we don't see any progress. When we met in October 2019, Mr. Lumkile Lusibane, the acting CEO, was an acting CEO then, in October 2019. She's still acting CEO. It means she's more than 12 months acting in that position, just herself. You now have CFO acting. We are not being told about the executive managers, and I would like them to indicate how many executive managers are acting, because that has not been indicated. It has been very generalized. And I was hoping that the audit committee would have shed light on these issues. And yet I don't think we got that, Chair. And I think that's for now. I would want to pause there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. And most of my issues have already been covered by the other members, so I will just very briefly just thank the Public Protector for this extensive report. As was indicated, this does form part of the annual report. But one of two issues that I just wanted clarity on, obviously the issue relating to the budget is a massive concern to all of us. But part of the suggested additional funding is 10 million rand per year for subject matter experts. And I'd just like an explanation as to what that would be. Obviously, understanding that at the same time, we need to assist the public protector. Then the issue relating to the COVID-19 inquiries, Chair, it has been raised by other members, but I do think that there is space for us to also ask issues relating to the degree, the complaints that the Public Protector has received, and we understand it's in excess of 1,600. The question was put, to what degree are you cooperating with the SIU and other institutions? And I would also really like to have a response from that, understanding that these matters have great impact on all of us, and in particular the 350 Rand a month special grant, the consequence of meeting with the Social Development Minister in that regard and finding out what progress has been made in that regard. Then the Public Protector also on media statement indicated concerns about the PPE procurement system at the Pope schools and other issues. So we understand there is an overlap there with the SIU, but these are also issues that do amount to maladministration. So when one looks at the procurement issues in general, There is a bill that is coming before Parliament, the Public Procurement Bill, and I think the experience that the Public Protector is having in these procurement issues would be helpful, and I'm sure I would request her office also to look into making submissions on that bill. The last issue does relate to litigation costs, and I fully appreciate that it has been raised by other members, but we also appreciate that in many cases the Public Protector is taken on review. However, there have been some severe indictments by the courts, and I would just question and ask the Public Protector the nature of the legal advice that you are receiving from counsel, particularly given the most recent SEA judgment in the James matter, which would suggest that possibly you're not getting the best legal advice when it comes to...
Honorable Swart is praying.
You'll finish now.
Okay, I didn't deal with my feeling deal. He's lost care. He's out of the system.
I was also temporarily out of the system.
Okay.
Yes, can we in the meantime have Honorable Mofokeng?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to thank the Public Protector and the team for the presentation. And I want to align myself with my colleague that it's clear that they really worked hard on this presentation. It shows that they take constructive criticism to work on whatever. Chair, I've been covered by a number of my colleagues. I want to check on the issue that we asked last time about the Public Protector's Office with one security and also to beef up the Deputy Public Protector's Office. Well, how far are we? But we also want to really appreciate, because we were a team that appointed the Deputy Public Protector, and for you to say that you've got the right candidate, it means that this collective has done a good job, and thank you for that. Now, the last part, it will be what was raised by Honorable Janji about the recommendations about those institutions or offices or departments that are not working on your recommendations, and you need help from Parliament. I wish that as I want to align myself with my colleague, that maybe we need to name and shame them, because there is a criticism on the ground to say certain reports are in public, others are not. Why? And they will say that in two years ago, there was an issue on public, and it was so much in the media, but the next thing you don't hear anything. Others, they come today, they are in public. So the other thing is that, which means that you need to beef up on your communications to do more. We see you, they are there, they are doing the reports, but we need to get more on those reports. But on the name and shaming those institutions, I really agree with Honorable Member Janji, but you also need to maybe assist us by sending their names. When was the report out? When was the report in and out to them, and they haven't actioned them? Maybe it can assist us. But I really think that if we don't allow you or people respect your office in that way, it's not going to help us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mofokeng. Is Honorable Swartberg?
Not yet, Chair, unfortunately.
Not yet. I just have one question, Public Protector. I think in your irregular
expenditure slide, there is a firm, Adams and Adams, that was briefed twice. Why one firm? What happens to the issue of the empowerment of the previously disadvantaged law firms? I mean, Adams and Adams is one of the big firms. Now, if it is picked up as a firm, I saw two briefings to it. I'm not sure how many other briefings that were not covered. Can you comment on that?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Mangwanishe. Thank you, Honorable Members, for your questions and your request for clarification and for also pointing out issues which we need to improve on. Firstly, in answering, in fact, I will answer some of the questions and request the DPP and the acting CEO to assist me in this investigation, and the chief operating officer. Honorable.
Sorry, PP. Generally, when there are so many questions, we usually give the entity some time so that they can be able to confer properly and we don't ambush them. So can we give you 3 minutes so that you can confer with your team who is going to be answering what, and you can organize yourself properly?
Thank you.
Can we have a comfort break for 3 minutes? Honorable members, will be back at 11 minutes past 6.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Okay, on the issue of the litigation costs, Honorable Breitenbach, definitely we will provide you with the necessary breakdown, and I would like to also apologize to the members of the Portfolio Committee for us not updating regularly. So I think maybe Chairperson, let's commit that we will update the committee. I don't know, how often do you want us to update? Do you want us to update monthly or quarterly? Because sometimes you'll find that there might not be any changes. I'll hear from the committee on that one. And then on the issue of the memorandum to explain what issues we need to look into. And remember as well, when we oppose matters, we oppose matters because we would want to assist the court and also where we feel that there might be an impact on the mandate of the public protector. So on the issue of investigators investigating matters which are 2 years and old, you asked why are we doing that. I think honorable members would know Section 69 of the Public Protector Act is very clear that the public protector may investigate those matters in deciding if there are special circumstances that may take into account the exercising of such a discretion. So the public protector has a discretion to investigate those complaints. So in such circumstances, issues which we take into account, which we always mention in our report, would want to take matters where we see that we can resolve the matter and there is basis for the complaint and we will resolve, and that we would want to rectify systemic problems which are there in state administration, and whether the matter can be successfully investigated. And we also take into account whether there are any alternative remedies which are available to the complainant. But also, we also checking the issue of Section 195 of the Constitution, whether the remedial action will also redress the imbalances or the prejudice which has been suffered by the said particular person. And then the judgment of the Constitutional Court, Honorable Brayton Bach, which you are mentioning, it will be helpful that we also rely on the previous judgments of the Concord on these matters, because also we take a cue from the development of the legal prescripts when we do our investigation. So the very same Constitutional Court as well indicated that the public protector, when issuing remedial actions or when we are taking any action to investigate, we always must have at the back of our mind that would want to cure any incidences of impropriety, prejudice, unlawful enrichment or corruption in government. So in government circles. So those are the paragraphs which we always mention in our reports. Also to cure any root causes in the complaints which we are investigating. Honorable Horn, the investigation of the politicians and the impact to the beneficiaries of Friede, that investigation indeed started in 2018 after I appeared before the portfolio committee. And the investigation has been, as I indicated, that is one of the investigations which will fall within our good governance and integrity, and those involve conduct failure issues. So you are also asking about why are we not updating the committee regularly. As I said, we will do that, and we will hear from the committee how often. Why no CEO appointed? Yes, we've advertised. We had to re-advertise because we received fewer candidates who applied and we interviewed, but then we wanted to broaden the scope. Hence, we had to re-advertise. Unfortunately, after that, then there were challenges which we will share with members of the committee, which we had to pick up when we were doing security checks and other assessments of the possible candidates which we wanted to appoint. Unfortunately, that has not been possible. And I think while still on the CEO, Honorable Janji, the CEO has been acting since February 2020, because the previous CEO departed in end of January. So Ms. Lucy Bane has been acting since this year. And then on the issue of the case management system, Honorable Horn, the acting CEO will respond on that, but I need to clarify that when we were approaching state security, we wanted them to assist on giving us a security assessment of that system. And as well, at first we thought they will assist us as a state institution to develop the system, but also they came back and said they are expenses. We will incur some expenses for them to develop a system for us. Hence, I indicated that we then had to take an option of requesting a system which is web-based, which CEO will inform the committee the steps we've taken. On disciplinary process, we will submit a list of the officials which are on suspension, facing disciplinary, and those whose contracts have been terminated. And then on the issue of COVID-19, Honorable Horn, you're saying, why go ahead and investigate when there's parallel investigations? I indicated earlier, our mandates are not the same. As you know, the public protector is the only institution, constitutional institution, which is responsible for investigations, remedying, and issuing a report. But also what is very important about the public protector, which is different from the SIU and the other law enforcement. Law enforcement, the criminal case can be, a person can be charged, convicted, but it's only that person. But then with the public protector report and remedial action, as we deal with uprooting any root cause problems, especially, again, still going back to the constitutional court judgment, that we need to remedy or cure any incidences of systemic failures in the system, so that whoever will take over from people whom we had findings against or they are removed from the system, but people who then take over from them must not repeat the same mistakes which the others have done. So when we take those appropriate remedial action, we need to also make sure that we give direction on how those remedies should be implemented and how they should redress whatever impropriety which has happened. So therefore, our mandate are totally different. And as you know, the SIU is a statutory body, and it's only the executive or the president who can issue a proclamation, and the recommendations of the SIU are not binding. And when they are issued, it depends whether they can be implemented. But I must hasten to say, we work closely with the SIU. We work closely with the AGSA during this particular time. It doesn't mean that we don't work close, but institutions are expected to cooperate with the public protector. That is a constitutional responsibility. The vacancy rate, the CEO will answer that. Okay, the Estina matter, I started with it, and you were wondering why now the extensions and why Zwane, I'm investigating Zwane. I've said several times that I didn't invite Mr. Zwane to my 50th birthday, and Mr. Zwane came with another participant or the person who attended the party, and there's nothing stopping me of operating independently without any fear or favor. This matter will be finalized, and we've issued all the implicated politicians with the Section 7-9 notices, and we are waiting for them to respond to that to those Section 7-9 reports. Unfortunately, again, COO will indicate why internally we had problems, because sometimes you find that due to workload, due to challenges of the workload of the investigators, they took time. And I was hoping that by the first week of September, we'll be issuing the Section 7-9 and give them enough time to respond. Because in terms of our rules, we give a person 14 days to respond, and they requested then an extension to respond. And I mean, to be fair and give them an opportunity to respond. Honorable Yako, thank you for your support. And indeed, we will prepare and share the whatever motivations we sent to National Treasury, where we were requesting additional funding. And the CEO will also deal with that. I think it's Honorable Janji or who asked as well, what is the, or Honorable Mola, if I'm not mistaken, who asked about what was the response of National Treasury in the particular matter. And on the issue of remedial actions, Honorable Jelle and yourself, Yako, we will definitely, and we started, DPP will share what we've done now with all the remedial actions, those who are not complying, because in the past we would send there and there to the speaker who would refer it to the relevant committee. But that process is it's something which we can build on, and it's something which we will share the list. We now have a very comprehensive list which will give you a picture of what is happening. The positions not filled due to financial constraints, CEO will deal with that. Honorable Ngola, the issue of vacancy rate as well, and thank you, yes, investigations, especially SCM, they've been or exceeded their targets. Thank you for that. And on the vacancy rate, CEO will deal with that, and indeed it was, the structure was reduced as we presented the last time, and we've engaged Treasury several times. CEO will indicate and what were the responses. We will also share the information on that, and the issue of COVID-19, we're dealing with that. We have a task team DPP will give the committee members an update on the on the progress which we've made on this matter, and especially I think there's also Honourable Swart who asked about COVID-19 the investigations, and we are dealing with we've received a lot of social grants complaints where they were rejected, with the UIF challenges, and as well the corruption in the PPE space, which we are dealing with them as a project, and we hope that we will finalize them quicker. Honourable members, there was also the concern about the usage of radio and the issue of access for the deaf community. Indeed, we will use webinars, we will use TV where we are allocated or allowed a slot, and we will make sure as well that when we have our webinars, we have a sign language speaker, and I must assure the Honourable Member that we do have our Braille and other, in fact, the newsletters which, or the newsletter and the pamphlets which deals with this matter. And the health and wellness breakdown, the CEO will deal with that. And the how many complaints we received from about SASA, I've indicated already, but DPP will take you into details about that. And Honourable Janji, I think ACE and our international relations will have to clarify what happened, why did we then go to town and report about all the quarters instead of only focusing on quarter four and the first quarter, since you have not yet received the annual report. I think possibly there's clarifications which we'll have to do. And on the issue of the pillars, where you indicating that there's somewhere where we are mentioning the safe haven, and the other one we are mentioning the stronghold. Definitely, we will make sure, Honourable Member, that we stick to what is there, because we do have a pamphlet which is very clear on what is our pillar, and that will be corrected. Actually, I wanted to get the pamphlet. I think either DPP or CEO will just read it for you, what we have in the pamphlet. And that my slides have been complaining a lot. I must cry. That's where I would find time to cry too. And you, my parents, you know, and I hope you will listen to me and intervene, because we don't have money. We don't have securities. State organs are not implementing remedial actions. And it's so sad, because that goes to the heart of what we are trying to do, especially the poor, the marginalized, people who are affected by the behavior and the conduct of the state. So, and we know that as representatives of the public, and you can hold the members of the executive to account, you will assist us. And the issue of the NPA, Chairperson, again, it goes back to the issue of why you're saying why I didn't mention a meeting. I will give all the details. My intervention, maybe then I will have to write a letter and take the Chairperson of the committee, the history of the matter, the meetings I held with the National Director of Public Prosecutions, the discussions, and what I've done from my side to make sure that this that relations, stakeholder relations. So now I need a mediator or a conciliator, so that, because we report to the same committee, so that you can come in and help us, so that we work together, because both of us, our intention is to deal with this maladministration, is to deal with corruption, is to eradicate the issue of crime in South Africa. So on that, that's the intention. On the forensic investigations, there's several investigations, Honourable Member. Also, we will give the details where you'd find that the minister or the DG has appointed a forensic investigation. There's one report we've issued recently in northwest of Mutobi, where there was a forensic report dating back to 2012. it was never implemented, and nothing was done about that report. So we had to have in our remedial action that they must implement that report. You'd find that there's other institutions which will rush to appoint a team of forensic investigators. They get the reports and then they just keep them. SAA, for instance, several of those reports which are there were never implemented, and there is a complaint which was lodged on the non-implementation of those. So not necessarily that we will go and want to enforce, but in our investigation, when we are told that that is not implemented, that's what we will be doing. And we are also saying, I mean, if that is availed to us, that budget, so that we can conduct the investigation, it will be very helpful. And the name and shame, we did that name and shame, Honorable Janji, I think it was 2018, and unfortunately some of the institutions and executives didn't take it kindly, and some of them even lodged a judicial review 4 years after the report was issued. And, you know, it was as if now we are fighting, but we were just reflecting on what is happening. But I think we will send that list to the committee or to Parliament so that you can help to intervene. And then the Concord judgment on the issue of the entire model was flawed. Indeed, there are investigators who are assisting the public protector in the investigations. Those who were suspended, it was relating to that. Unfortunately, I depend on them, because in terms of the Public Protector Act, I've delegated my powers. They conduct investigations, and then after that, analyze the information and then send the Section 7-9 to the Public Protector. And that's why I said even DPP assisted a lot in this particular issue, because now it's compulsory to even when you submit the report, bring the paginated record, because some of the personal costs which I've been subjected to are as a result of the very same Rule 53 not availing all the evidence which is supposed to be there, and not necessarily about the drafting or how the report is. And a lot of our remedial actions are set aside, or reports set aside, on technicality or on procedural issues, but not on the gist or the on factual issues. But I think we will have to improve on that one. And the skills set, I think we will provide the information, skills required, and that is available, caseload, performance of each, those who always write reports which are set aside, and those who close reports without investigation, we have that, and those who receive bonuses, and how many suspended, we will provide the information, and the litigation costs, we will update, and as I said, we will hear from the committee how often must we update. And the audit committee, I think they will respond on the issues of the audit committee when you were saying the 70% first quarter. But I must indicate that, remember, the 70% from first quarter is the work of the previous, which it's complaints we received from January to March, or even from the previous year. And I must indicate that we were one of the institutions which was working and during the lockdown. Our investigators and some of the management were working offline, in fact online. So some of the work they managed to finalize, especially the complaints which we've received. Ms. Lusibane has not been acting for more than 12 months. As I indicated, that she started acting this year. The acting EMs is only one, Mr. Nyembe, because the other EM has been suspended due to the part of the investigation where there was the issue of records which were not availed, where a report was taken on review, and is one of those where personal costs have been requested against the public protector. The Honorable Swart, the massive budget, the issue of budget indeed is a concern. The 10 million pay for subject experts, who are those we can submit the details, but it includes your forensic investigation, actuaries. If we are investigating a complicated matter, now we have a complaint which was lodged 2016 against Eskom, the Kusile matter or the contract. So it's hundreds and hundreds of contracts which are there, which will need a technical expertise to go through. So we're referring to those kinds of investigations. The COVID-19 what decree? The cooperation of other institutions. We're working, as I indicated, closely with SIU, with the AGSA, and as well the FIC and others. We're cooperating, and we can provide information on those. And the proposal that we submit inputs to the procurement bill, I think we will consider that, and we will definitely make sure that we give our inputs, because indeed, Honorable Swart, we now are investigating a lot of those procurement irregularities, and we can share the information so that that information can be utilized to avoid repeating the same mistakes which were there in the previous bill or legislation. Most cases taken on review is not most cases, Honorable Swart. A lot of our cases are not taken on review, but some of them are just remedial actions which are not implemented, and it's very few which are taken or which were taken on review. We will share that list, which is the list of all the cases and how many are on review and how many are pending judgment and how many are still waiting for the court dates. And the legal advice received from counsel on GEMS matter, definitely on any case which where we outsource, we appoint an attorney and then we appoint a senior counsel or a junior counsel, definitely we will discuss and engage on how, if we are opposing the matter, we're opposing the matter based on what. Because this GEMS matter, it was also at first not cooperating with the investigation, not wanting the public protector to conduct preliminary to determine whether we can proceed with the investigation and come to the conclusion whether we are conducting full-scale investigation or indeed we inform the complainant that we cannot investigate the matter. So the main important thing was on the powers of the public protector. Honorable Mofokeng, indeed, security is a challenge. CEO will indicate that is the biggest issue we are facing as an institution. We don't have the securities in our various offices, but we will indicate what we've done and then to capacitate the DPP office. Unfortunately, when our COE compensation of employees is being reduced by 16 million already, we've received a letter from Treasury, but then that CEO will talk about and what we can do with the internal capacity which we are having. The name and shame, we agree, we will send the list. And briefing of communications, indeed, our communication is very understaffed or under-resourced as well. And the issue of Chairperson, the Adams and Adams matter, this company was appointed. CEO will indicate the year. I think it was dealing with, when I joined PPSA 2016, they were dealing with some matters which were finalized by the former public protector. They were appointed during that particular time. I must indicate that we do have a panel of attorneys which is well representative, taking all sectors and all the issues, the policies of government as far as transformation and everything are concerned. And I think if you can check also most of the SCs and advocates which we are using, we are trying to balance and empower the previously disadvantaged individuals. So I'll hand over to DPP to address the issues which are in asset. She will, and then she will hand over to acting CEO. DPP.
Thank you, Public Protector, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, and honorable members. I will deal with the issues of the remedial action as well as the COVID-related cases. Honourable Members, on the issue of the remedial actions, we have put together the total list of outstanding remedial actions from 2010 to date, where departments have never responded nor have filed for review. In this regard, we have also met with the then DG of Presidency, who was the chairperson of Foresight, to give us a slot in Foresight so that we are able to do the presentation at Foresight and seek their cooperation. We have also started engaging with some of the departments because some of the remedial actions they allege are not implementable, so we are looking into this on how these issues can be addressed. We have also ensured that the team is preparing a list for Parliament as well of these respective cases to ensure that we receive the assistance from Parliament side to ensure that our remedial actions are being implemented. Because when we have looked at the remedial actions, some of these transgressions are being repeated, and solely because there's been no implementation of these remedial actions. I will then proceed to the issue of the COVID grant relief. We have engaged with the CEO of SASSA. Out of the 1,544 cases, over 500 cases have been resolved. The other cases, they have reported that they could not pay on those because from the inquiries that they have made, they have rejected on the following grounds. Some were approved, but there were no banking details provided. Some were Nexus registered. Others were existing SASSA grant recipients. Some were registered on the government payroll. Identification verification failed. IRP5 registered, UIF registered, not on SARS database. CETA in 10 and others did not provide ID numbers. There is still a process to resolve some of the few outstanding matters. We had also received UIF matters, and those are in the process of being resolved. From the COVID-related intense investigations that we are doing, we have appointed a team which is led by a very senior executive manager, Advocate Stoffel Fourie, as well as a chief investigator, Mr. Silo Mutupi, who are leading the team of 10 senior investigators who are dealing with the 14 matters reported around the various departments in the country, which involve matters from the provision of water and sanitation services, the procurement of PPEs, municipal operations and governance, Baybridge border fence procurement process, waste management, distribution of food parcels, customer initiation and cultural practices, access to healthcare and access to housing, and precautionary measures to mitigate employee health and safety risk matters. Now, out of those, about 14 matters are procurement related. What is being done, this team is working extensively and solely on these matters 3 times a week to ensure that investigations in these particular matters are being expedited. We are working very closely with the SIU, as the public protector has mentioned. Before we started this project, we had a meeting with the AG together with the head of the SIU, where we discussed how we are going to work together and cooperate in respect of the COVID-related matters. And we have agreed that all three institutions are pivotal in the fight against COVID and that we should cooperate with each other. As it is, the COO meets regularly with the team from the SIU that's responsible for the investigation. They share information and ensure that there is no duplication in this regard. Some matters were referred to us by the SIU, and those are matters that relate to our mandate. Honourable members, we are expediting these matters. They are in progress. Some of them we've even requested some information from the Fusion Centre. SIU is also part of Fusion Centre, so on matters where they have the information, they do particularly share with us. I will stop there for now, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you, DPP. We'll go to Ace.
Thank you, Jefferson, PP, and honorable members. As committed by the PP, we will provide the details on the litigation as well as the matters related to disciplinary of colleagues within the institution. We also want to appreciate the commitment by the portfolio committee in intervening in relation to our funding challenges. To respond to the remaining questions, the issue of the case management system, it is correct that some years ago we had engaged the State Security Agency for assistance. However, the cost implications of the proposal that they had developed or they were going to develop for us, we couldn't afford it. And therefore, we're currently working on a web-based, or we're currently in the process of developing and implementing a web-based solution, which we are hoping will be implemented before the end of the third quarter of this financial year. Such a system comes to us at no cost, and we will apprise the committee once the implementation has been done and to indicate the successes around it. The question on vacancy rates, the vacancy rate is worked on the 582 positions, which is the revised organogram. 360 are funded positions. The reason why the slide on the COE does not show any under expenditure is because of also the confirmed budget cuts by the National Treasury in the current year. Treasury has indicated that we're cutting 16.1 million of our COE budget. So we're likely to actually overspend in that account instead of an under expenditure. Targets that have been exceeded or the assurance on the quarter one performance, the quarter one performance has been audited by internal audit, but as the PPS indicated that the work completed in the first quarter came from projects or investigations that have been started in the previous financial year, we're likely to actually experience the effects of the lockdown severely from quarter two moving forward. Hence, we had to revise our targets accordingly to deal with that risk. The issues raised by audit, if they have been resolved, does it mean consequence management was implemented? Of course, where consequence management needed to be implemented, we have done so. And I can indicate that cases that are serving in the financial misconduct committee that we've established to deal with all matters of misconduct related to finance, they have been audited by the Auditor General, but we'll leave that for them to present when they come to the portfolio committee at the end of the month, as indicated by members. Our engagement with National Treasury on required funding, I must say that in the current year, we didn't have much bargaining power with the National Treasury on the basis that the budget cuts are imposed on us. It's unlike in May when there was an indication of a 17% cut and Treasury requested us to indicate what the implications would be. Then we had discussions. But at this point, Treasury was just indicating to us that these are the amounts we're going to cut you by. And as we stand, 16.1 million in the current year for for compensation of employees has already been confirmed in writing by National Treasury that it will be cut. So there wasn't really much room to negotiate for further funding requirements. However, what we presented to the Portfolio Committee is also not strange to National Treasury. These are the items we'll be indicating to National Treasury that we require funding for, which includes security. We've had several of our offices experiencing burglaries where we lose assets and et cetera. But we have tried within our limited resources to introduce a video-fied alarm system, which is currently in the process of being implemented by the awarded service provider in this regard. In relation to our webinars, the marketing or the advertising of our webinars, we will do our best, members, to advertise them in all our digital platforms, including our website, because the TV costs, we may not be able to afford them at this stage with our current budget. So we'll ensure that in our social media platforms and the website, we also indicate as such. Downgrading of positions. The positions were downgraded as part of the review of the organizational structure. We had all the positions, especially in support or in admin, being evaluated. We're assisted by the DPSA in this regard, hence the downgrading of the positions. In relation to the wellness employee wellness program, the cost is not necessarily 266 million or the funding that we require. It's actually 266,000 additional that we require to ensure that we've got an effective wellness program for our employees. And then the issue of the fourth quarter performance, Chair and members, the invitation that we've received in relation to this session indicated that we need to present to the committee our performance of all the four quarters of the financial year, which ultimately indicates that it's the entire year's performance and also the first quarter of the current year. We can be advised, Chair, if there was a misinterpretation on our side in that regard. PP has responded to the issue of the skill set. The other things, I think, is for the chairperson to respond. But before I can continue, just to add on the Adams and Adams expenditure, the procurement of the services some years ago was irregular in that the RFQ or the request for quotation process was used. However, the expenditure that we incurred exceeded the threshold of 500,000, which is for quotation basis. Under normal circumstances or in terms of the regulations and the PFMA, procurement that is for expenditure above 500,000 should be on an open tender. Hence, we sit with this irregular expenditure in relation to this firm and another one. And I must indicate that the expenditure is incurred in the previous financial year on the basis of matters that were still with this particular firm prior to us awarding a panel of attorneys that started in 2017 December, which is currently running. I can confirm that all of the expenditure is related to legal fees or legal costs since December 2017 through the system where we have those firms accredited and we had an open bidding process. There's a response that the chairperson will provide as well as the acting CFO as well as the COO in relation to the request by the PP on the free ADM matter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, CEO. Chairperson, can I allow the COO just on the issue of why the delay? Why are we not? Because, on our side, I must indicate that there were instances where we delayed to finalize the drafting of or finalize the investigation. I think just in a minute, COO.
Thank you. Thank you, PP and Jefferson and honorable members. Yes, it is indeed correct that there has been some delays in the finalization of this matter. Largely, Chair and members, this has been caused by a number of factors. I think internally, there are quite a large number of cases that the investigators are dealing with, obviously taking into account the kind of capacity that we have as an organization in respect of the numbers that we have. And I think earlier we did reflect that we have some cases that are 2 years and older, and we've decided to place a specific focus on those cases to an extent of including those in our APP so that we're able to deliver in terms of the finalization of the case of the cases. The external factors that have really led us to delay in terms of this matter, Chairperson members, it has to do with some departments and other institutions that we were relying on to continue with the investigation. And a typical example, Chair, there has been a number of, and I don't want to deal with in detail the merits of the matter. There has been allegations that some of the politicians that are being investigated actually traveled abroad. Now, we wanted confirmation from the relevant institutions and department to confirm that that allegation. There has been also a number of documents that we have been requesting, which have caused a delay. It's your EXCO documents in the Free State provincial government. It's your documents that would largely lie with the various departments, including the provincial treasurer and the Department of Agriculture. Including multiple of documents to enable us to be in a position to create a picture that we will obviously have to follow in terms of the investigation process. What I can confirm, Chairperson and members, at this stage is that we have now issued the notices to the respective implicated individuals, and they have requested for extension up until the 15th of this month. As part of the investigation process, I'm quite confident that we should be able to finalize this investigation no later than the end of the third quarter. It's safe to say, Chairperson, that the investigation is ongoing. It is really at an advanced stage, and I think that the portfolio committee as well as the public will be aware of the outcome of the investigation as soon as it's concluded. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the chairperson of the audit committee.
Thank you, PP. Thank you, Chair. There were a couple of questions that were directed to the chairperson of the audit committee. I'll start with when the member wanted to verify, is the report, does it contain all the information? All the information will be on the audit report, which goes hand in hand with the annual report. That will be the best confirmation of the processes and the verification that was happening throughout the year, because that's not based only on the interactions and the communications that the audit committee has had with management throughout the year. That also contains the verification of internal audit, which is independent. So the audit report will be the best bet to verify the information that has been submitted. Let's take into consideration, example would be the performance information of 70% achievement. The 70% will also come from management as an achievement, maybe it will come as 80%. When internal audit goes and verifies and gives an assurance, they can only verify maybe 70%, because that's what has been supported by evidence. We have invoices, we have POE to support that achievement. So when we get that audit report, that 70%, not only will it be verified by internal audit and given that assurance, we'll also have a report that is coming from the AG. So the audit
report will subsequently be sent through to the committee with all the verification and the final percentage. I also want to touch on terms of consequence management that the committee should not forget that consequence management is not only discipline and firing people. Consequence management is first understanding what went wrong. Because if we don't understand what is still needed to be done for employees, reason why we have to spend time in investigating and understand what went wrong, so we can address the root cause, because that's what also the AGSA looks for. They're not going to only worry about what have you done with what happened previously. What are you going to do going forward? So what they look at is the preventative controls. Well, how are you going to prevent this, the same mistake happening in the future? And that's what we have as a detail, and that's what the AG comes and reviews all the time. I also want to talk about the vacancies. There was one member also who mentioned the CEO acting since 2018. But that's not the case. I know the PPA has also addressed it, but when we formed this audit committee, there was no CFO and there was no CEO. I was reporting directly to the PP. And then usually I have to report to the CFO and the CEO, but those positions were not occupied. But we worked hand in hand to make sure that we have leadership and those positions were fully, fully occupied. And if you look at reports before those positions were occupied until now, there's so much improvement, not only in terms of our finances, also in terms of performance. Our risk has been reduced significantly. So there's a difference when those positions are filled and when those positions are not filled. My comfort is that even though that position of CEO has not been occupied, the CFO has so much experience in terms of the organization as a whole and also with finances. So we're still achieving those objectives. And also the comment also on the 70% that it was also during the times of lockdown. We're dealing with previous information, we're reporting it now. It's like also the audit that was done with the AGSA now. It went smoothly because of the information and the amount of work that has been done previously. So you'll see when the audit report comes from things to say about the organization and the achievements. Because they were auditing remotely. There were times where the organization was closed because of the COVID cases. But the audit still ran smoothly because now the record keeping has improved. It also talks to the 70% on performance. When I started my presentation, I also mentioned reporting is very, very important. The record keeping is very important. So those are the things that we're working on. I think also the PPE and the CEO also forgot to mention that the strategy, especially for improving on our finances, are improving as much as we have budget cuts. But let's also, as an audit committee, look at the performance information, look at the accuracy and the reporting and the reporting thereof. I think I've covered the issues that were posed to the audit committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Over to you.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, PP, and to your team, and to the honourable members. First of all, I think let's start by saying we wish you a good, happy birthday, the 25-year anniversary. Last week we celebrated the 25-year anniversary of the South African Human Rights Commission. And very soon we should be celebrating your anniversary. I think we are cautiously very happy, subject to the AG's verification of your performance. But what has been presented today, I think is extremely encouraging. It shows that the organization is moving with speed towards good health. If you are approaching 80% of performance, an institution, we should be striving for 100%. The threshold and the standard for a Chapter 9 institution should be always be very high. So even when you come and present before us, you should expect higher level of scrutiny because you are a Chapter 9 institution. So you should not take it that we don't like you. It's because of the responsibility entrusted upon you as a Chapter 9 institution. The issues that were raised around budget cuts, we have a principled decision as the portfolio committee that we don't support budget cuts, especially for Chapter 9 institutions. And it's quite clear with your case that the budget cuts are now crippling the organization. If you have to close in areas like the Northern Cape, I mean, that province needs your interventions, needs your assistance. If you go to many courts, the first thing you will get is a scanner, a security system. Now, it is really disheartening that an institution that deals with serious issues and with sensitive issues, it does offices do not have security. I think that is very disheartening. I should also think that when there was that judgment that your remedial actions are now binding, that should have called upon a new way of looking at how you are talked to the quality that is expected of your investigations, and so that when they are challenged, they should be able to withstand scrutiny. They are more relevant to how the Office of the Public Protector should be budgeted for. I think that is why we really do support the call by the Finance Minister of a zero-based budgeting. We think that it should be able to address institutions like the Office of the Public Protector. But it's important also that our business case should be strong. We should not behave as if we are entitled. We should have a good value proposition why our budget should be increased or should not be taken away. So that is on the budget cut. On the issues I think take a view that the public protector will give us a list and then we will publish a list, the name and shame, without any due process. I think it's going to put us in a serious challenge. I think it will be important to sit down as how are we going to process the list that is going to come from the Office of the Public Protector. Also bearing in mind the amount of work that list would present, especially if we have to deal with a due process. To what an extent should we be engaging the speaker and looking at a parliament's approach rather than a portfolio committee approach? Because you might find that some of those lists will necessitate that we have to interact with other portfolio committees. For instance, the public protector talks about the in Northwest, the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Governance, if you talk about enterprise to approach this issue, and bearing in mind that we have made a similar commitment to the South African Human Rights Commission. That we know that we would be in a position of being to deliver on them. For instance, the public protector has raised the issue of changes to the Public Protector Act, because the current Public Protector Act is not in line with the Constitution of 1996. That is going to take a lot of time on its own. And that is not the only entity we are dealing with. So I think let's take a retreat to think about how are we going to be processing this particular issue. The issue between us convening a meeting between the Office of the Public Protector and the National Director of Public Prosecution, let's first get the complaints from the public protector in writing and evaluate it, and we will think about a course of action we will take after we have gone through that particular complaint. The issue of the litigation cost, public protector, we should be expecting by the end of November that you should have given us those costs and the list as requested by Honorable Breitenbach. And then thereafter, we should be able to report quarterly to us, not monthly, on those issues. The other issue that I think is important that we should get an update from yourself, it's after you have received a memorandum from the Junior Council, at least by early next year, you should be able to respond to us on how are you going to have an approach that is going to deal with what the court said it's a flawed investigative model. You should be able to present to us by early next year, we should be able to get that particular intervention from your side. I think, honourable members, that would be all. We are hopeful that the Auditor General will confirm what you have reported to us, and we are really encouraged by what we have received today. Thank you for the hard work to yourself, to your deputy, and to your managers and everybody. That has been reported today. Thank you very much, PP. Can we have a few minutes with the Portfolio Committee? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good night.
Thank you very much. Good night. Can we have just portfolio committee members?
Yeah, I can ask Jan Hubert to excuse us. Thank you, Jan Hubert. You can leave now.
But if members of the media, it's fine. It's still a portfolio committee meeting. It's fine. There's no problem. It's just 1 minute. Honorable members, we have distributed to yourselves a letter from the farmers, the cannabis farmers from the Eastern Cape, asking for an extension to the submission of what is this thing? Comments. As you know, that the deadline is tomorrow, and I was generally asking that because we would not be with we would stay until the end of the year, we will be seized with TPP bills. But maybe we should consider granting them. That was the issue, honorable members. It's urgent because the
I think end of November is sufficient given the complexities of this matter and the fact that we will probably be dealing with other legislation. Well, we've got to deal with the GBV legislation, so. I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be, as you suggested, the end of November. I'm open to hearing other views on that.
End of November is fine. There's no rush. Richard, we're not going to deal with it now. Relax.
No, I think because they were asking for 6 months, I think Honorable Janji, maybe end of November would be.
That's fine, Chair. Before no. You close, I wanted to raise something before you close, Chair. Just,
okay.
No, I didn't want to interfere on your conclusion thing. Just the two things, but I wouldn't want us to interfere in terms of these institutions because they did not answer the PP one chair. And the second one, I know the naming and change, it should not be done by us. The PP has done that before. So the point I was making that, what stops her from doing that when she has those problems? Because I don't think it was really come to the portfolio committee, the naming and shaming thing. It was meant for the PP office.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. I was generally running away of us getting inundated with those issues.
Always, Chair. They must do it.
Because immediately you take that from them and a municipality in a good ruling is challenging them, and we are part of that process, then we are transferring the risk to Parliament. So, no, thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think Committee Secretary and Mr. Raja, I think we should issue a statement tomorrow to cover all the newspapers that we are extending until end of November. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 9:30.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much.